Hey you, welcome to the very first episode of Impressions Podcast, where we try to understand the evolving landscape of digital marketing in Africa. Today, we'll be looking back at how far the African digital marketing industry has come, the rise of new marketing pillars, learning from failures, crafting your digital marketing career, and so much more. My guests on this episode are two of my favorite marketing leaders, PC Timmy, who a lot of you know as the creator of Founders Connect show. However, having spent nearly a decade working in the digital marketing industry, she'll be speaking more about her role as the Director of Marketing at Smile Identity and her work leading marketing teams across companies. Alongside Peace is Michael KJ, current Head of Product and Growth at Umdundo. With nearly 13 years of leading growth teams across companies like BBC, The Guardian Nigeria, Jobberman, and many more. I'm super psyched to be sharing this episode with you all. So sit back, grab a cup of coffee, hot chocolate, smoothie, or whatever works for you, and enjoy this one from me to you. I'm Thera, your host for this season. Hi, Pace.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. So I'm glad you could join Pace with Michael. Michael KJ. So welcome to Marketing Africa Cafe. If you're stepping into a cafe, what would you typically order? Coffee, hot chocolate, smoothies? What type of person are you?
Water? Yeah, water, tea sometimes.
Yeah.
Smoothies sometimes. Never coffee. I don't drink coffee.
That's weird. Nobody I've had on this call claims to be a coffee person. So who are the people that actually drink coffee? Okay, yeah, Michael, yeah. I saw you with your own cup of coffee. Of course. Yeah, of course you would drink coffee.
Yeah. But I don't, yeah. I've never drunk, okay, I've drunk coffee maybe like once or twice in my life to just see what's the buzz about. I didn't get it, so now I stick to water. Every now and again I would do tea. Yeah.
But yeah. I think coffee, the only great thing is the smell.
No,
Michael,
what did you say?
Water is healthy. Coffee isn't.
Water is healthy, right? Yeah, you can't go wrong with water.
Well done. We need to change our ways.
Say well done. So welcome. My first intro question is going to be, because I've been working in marketing for a while, and I know I've gotten the whole either stay or leave. So please, I'm going to ask you, have you ever felt like exiting the marketing industry at any point? If so, why? If not, why not? Because I get a lot of people that say that.
That's a really good question to start with. I have thought about leaving the marketing industry. So I think there are many paths that I can go, and one of them will always end up in marketing because I have many years of experience. So it's like the forever backup plan. Regardless of where life takes me, at least I can also fall back to see it. I have a bit of marketing experience. I can get one or few or two jobs. But the other, like two other alternative paths has no marketing in them. But 2 years ago, I was strongly considering moving to product. In fact, I did get a product management role. Then I'm like, okay, maybe not quite. So I went back to do marketing full time. And the reason why I wanted to leave is, so the thing with marketing, like you guys would know, is our job is very numbers, right, in clients. Like, the only way to prove your worth as a marketer is to always think about numbers, users, revenue, client, partners, depending on whether you're B2C or B2B. But it's always like you hardly see marketers who are not having to prove their work by like measurable metrics. Maybe if you're head of comms in a very big company, and then at that time your work then just becomes like PR and communications and branding. But when you're like marketing growth, it's always numbers. And I think I just got tired of KPIs. I'm like, engineers are just coding. And as long as they're just like, I'm sure that they hate their job sometimes, but they're just coding and they don't know how to think about how users are faring. And product managers are like, you know, they know the product management and writing PRDs. They'll come and give you marketing products and say, oh, yeah, take, go and sell. And
you have to launch.
And if it doesn't grow, they will say, oh, they didn't build it well and the product manager didn't do their job. It would be like marketers and nothing. So I was like, I think I want to be on the other side for a bit.
I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, I'm tired of all of this. But then I realized, okay, to be fair, I don't mind it. I like it. I'm also very performance inclined and like goals driven. So I think maybe it works for my personality because it means that I'm always looking for something to like push and challenge me. It's a source of stress, but also a source of joy. So yeah, so I'm here for now. For now, because I'm gonna get tired again in another 1 year or 2 years and be like, let me go on explore.
I think I saw you starting an MBA. So yeah.
I did. Yeah, that's because like alternative paths, and I'm trying to give myself as many
chances.
Yeah, as many foolproofs, you know. So I was thinking about it like I have almost 10 years of experience in marketing now, right? I've done both B2B and B2C. So I can very much talk about and do in any of those industries or those segments. But I want to give myself other options where it's not just like marketing. What would it take to be a great CEO or a great COO or a great chief of growth, right? That is handling multiple departments, not just marketing, like products and people and stuff. And yeah, an MBA sounds like an additional, like I can't go wrong with it, you get. It would just be, I have this experience. Now I actually understand stuff that other marketers or other people would not really get. Like I'm doing accounting and decision-making with data and economics and organizational behavior for this first term. And I'm like, this is fun stuff. It's hard stuff. Like who's every message? But I like the idea of knowing those things that then gives me multiple options. So yeah.
I'm nodding. I was just like, yes. Because I can totally relate. I'm doing my master's in data science. It's like, why are you doing this? But I've been here, I'm in my almost third term. And at the core of it, I know that I can still infuse this in marketing. I love the data part. And like, it's just everything you've said. Michael, I saw you nod. And I'm going to ask you, I'm not going to ask you what I asked first. I'm going to ask you, what do you think is a major challenge facing the digital marketing industry in Africa?
Okay, that's a tough one. The reason I've said that also is because I see a lot of people say, and I see a lot of people say they're digital marketers, but then they are not digital marketers. I think if you are they just buy ads, they buy users, and then it's just saying, I think so. I would say the biggest, and you know, Peace mentioned something earlier, which is every marketing person has to be numbers driven. She gave some metrics initially when she started. She mentioned users, revenue. What I have seen is a lot of digital marketers end at just, I mean, they're just users. You just tell them, okay, what do? We've grown our users. Outside of that, I mean, they will talk about engagement, right? But then they are not thinking about revenue. What's the company, the unit economics? What's the company, the business you work for, the product you are promoting? What are you getting back? And so if I would say the biggest challenge, I think the biggest challenge has been around, will I say know-how or just understanding what digital marketing is, which isn't just buying Facebook ads. I mean, anyone can buy. It's not just going to your Google AdWords, logging in, and just running a pay-per-click campaign or just running one CPM brand awareness campaigns or running CPC campaigns or CPA, right? Yeah, maybe CPA is close to it, but then it's just thinking about what the customer lifetime value is, how is this product, what's the, how do you do health checks on the customers you're bringing in, which I think it's, a lot of people think it's a product thing, but I think it's more marketing because the marketing guy is buying the users, not the product guy. So it needs to align to see the channels and what is working. So I think the biggest challenge has been people fully understanding what marketing is. And why I say it's the biggest challenge is by the time, and we look at when people have to, I mean, you are looking for remote jobs, you have to apply for a remote job, and then you see, you get the kind of questions they ask you, maybe a company in the UK is very different from, I mean, what they ask you. And it's also about the CEO, right? Your line manager or whoever you are reporting to, if it's the CEO, you can report to anyone at any point, but the key thing is just them understanding what they need from you and how they tie what you do as a marketer to what comes in as revenue. Not necessarily, we've just gone to 2 million users. That's fine. some platforms preach their numbers, we've grown to 30 million users, that's fine, but is your revenue growing at the same level? And are you getting value from all of your users? What's your churn rate? And they're like, so it's just understanding that health check on the people, on the users you're buying, rather than just focusing on initial, I mean, what you can see. I'm buying a user for 0.04, 0.20.
Bottom line.
Yeah. So I would say to me, I think that's a major challenge. And you find people in several groups, you know, they are marketing dons or digital marketing dons, because I mean on LinkedIn people just talk, oh, you can brag, but then when you have to now interview them for a role, you're now seeing a lot of things they're missing from it. So yes, it's just understanding that part. Yeah, I think that to me is like a major challenge.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I think that would be maybe starting out entry level. I mean, you're always starting out with just bottom line impact and all of that. As you grow, you kind of get insights into, oh, you actually need to impact bottom line, except maybe you start working from agency. I mean, so it just depends on where you start.
Maybe, yes.
But so I'm going to ask you.
Right.
So I'm going to ask you, like, I know you currently start out leading growth at Undomdo, and right now you're a VP product. What's that like, and how did you, am I missing that? Or what's your current?
So it's not VP. I mean, it's VP status, but it's not VP in terms of my job title. I report to the CEO, of course. So I used to lead, I used to be head of growth, but now I am head of product and growth. I manage four teams: growth, data, product, and the dev team. Some I manage the software.
What's that like?
It's a lot of, I now manage the dev team, and but then if you look at, I used to be growth and marketing. And Peace, I know you've done, I've followed you for some time, so I know you've done growth, or you currently do growth. I don't know if you've changed, but we used to call it growth and marketing. It's just funny, this whole job title thing.
The title is very, yeah, it's very weird.
The marketing function, and when you ask Peace about marketing, I've dropped the marketing function, which is not my strength. I'm never going to do brand awareness campaigns for it. Traditional marketing is never my thing. I would rather focus on, I spend $1, I make 1.5. So I manage, for under my growth team, we have the paid media team and then the SEO team. So for paid media, he spends the money and I'm giving him, okay, you spend $1, what are we getting back? That's his KPI. Not just spend $1 to acquire users. It's, are we making 1.5 from this $1? So then there's product and
I know you used to work at Guardian, you worked at BBC, so how did you go from that to current music streaming platform and all of that, like how? And I know you've been at what's this job platform, Jobberman, so it's kind of like, so how, from where to where now, like, so what was that trajectory?
I've always been a product person. I think from Jobberman, Jobberman was my first kind of full-time job. I used to be a developer before then, so it was just freelance. So with Jobberman, I did some coding and I built applications with PHP. Jobberman, BBC, I got tired of the newsroom. I worked with the BBC for 3 years. I worked with Guardian newspapers and digital. I always wanted to go back to do product. I didn't see those. I mean, while they are challenging to journalists, they were not challenging to me. Those platforms weren't challenging to me. It's not giving me what I really wanted. So I knew I wanted to move into the product space, and that was why I got, I applied for the job at Mudundo. How did I get it? I think it was just, it's going back to what I learned at Jobberman. At Jobberman, I did almost everything. So again, going back to digital marketing, I started out as SEO, I did social media, I did email marketing. At some point, I was just doing everything in one. So that's a digital marketing person, right? But it's a lot of work. And conversion rate optimization, digital analytics, and you're doing paid media, you're doing SEO. So I kind of combined everything. So the knowledge I had was what took me.
Just
set me up. So at that level, entry level, I had to acquire that knowledge. I mean, I didn't acquire it willingly. It was kind of forced, but then it helped me. Because then it's like, okay, just give Michael, he should do it. Just give Michael. And you know how they push. And of course, now I'm grateful to the guys at Jobberman for doing that. Good, I didn't resign. I did resign after 3 years, but I learned it.
Yeah, Pierce, that's good to you. I know you did some agency work initially starting out, am I correct? Yeah. And then you did marketing and then growth and then product and now back to director of marketing at Smile Identity.
Yeah.
Yes. So how did we go from here to here?
And I mean, unlike Michael that has done product and has done coding, I've always just been in marketing, just doing, I guess, different forms of it. So yes, my first 2 years of my career was an agency. Initially started by actually co-founding my own agency with my friend Joyce. Then working in Web Coopers. Then I did a year of training actually at World Vision Digital Center. So I was splitting my time like 20% with the agency and then 80% in actually the training center. But I think after doing both agency and training for the first, I guess, 2.5, almost 3 years of my career, I felt like I was just at the surface and I hadn't gone in depth yet and I wanted to get that in-depth experience. Training was good. I think training that 1 year was probably the best decision I made in my career because it was the reason why I think I'm a great marketing generalist right now. Because like when you teach, you learn twice. I learned like 100 times just teaching every aspect of marketing to different kinds of people, executives, young people, mid-level professionals. And so it was fantastic. But though I had like all of the theoretical knowledge and then marketing, when you're an agency, you don't do as much. It's only now that you're seeing a few growth marketing agencies coming and they want to like be able to like do all the way to like revenue. At the time, marketing agencies, let's do campaigns, let's report impressions, let's report clicks, let's do influencers. Yes, it's fun and vibes, but I was like, this is not it. I kind of want to know how the ads that were running and the impressions that we're getting and the app download, what's it converting to? So I said, you know, let me go to the third part of it. So let me go to the client side, which was like the startup. And I started with a head of marketing title, a head of marketing role. But I realized very quickly that marketing is, when you still think about marketing, even in startup side, and you're just doing like brand campaigns, like Michael was saying, and you're just like doing, you know, anything that is not figuring out how you're keeping your users and how you're changing those users to like customers, you're not actually really growing the company. And so I started learning like data analytics, figuring out, oh, how we need to track, we need to do amplitude. I didn't know all of that stuff with agency stuff. So we had to figure it out. And that's when I now realized, oh my God, there's a whole segment called growth. And at the time, it wasn't a buzz term in Nigeria tech like it was like in 2019. Like it was still very nascent. So I didn't even see anybody in Nigeria who was doing good marketing. So I started looking at foreign companies, kind of really understand. And it was by reading a bunch of JDs and just realizing, oh my God, this is what they're looking for. They're thinking about PPC as performance marketing because it's actually driven to like the end goal. They're thinking about it as doing like a lot of experiments, doing like data stuff. And I'm like, I think I want to do this. So that's how I got into growth. Just curiosity of realizing, I don't think that I'm actually doing the work that my current company is paying me for because we're just still doing marketing. So I started learning, but then decided, you know what, let me go and work for a company where I could really do like growth. And that's kind of how I landed in SitStars. And that's where I really understand growth. I did experiments. Like growth for me to tomorrow is experimentation and is every part of the funnel. So when people are doing the argument on Twitter, marketing is growth, I'm like, not quite. Like if you actually sit in growth teams, you would know that they are very technical and it's not
very
about
data driven
in campaigns. Like it's really about like the product-led part of things, the content-led part of things, then the marketing that helps with the acquisition, then the, like, yeah, it's a whole thing. and I'm just grateful to be able to do that. So, yeah, I did that, and I'm still very much a growth marketer, and I approach even from a growth perspective. Like, one of my OKRs for my team right now for, like, Q2 is the amount of experiments that we need to do, right, this quarter. And I'm working in a B2B. I'm not working in B2C. So there's the technical person on my team was like, Kelvin, your one OKR is we're going to be able to run 6 experiments this quarter to get as many demo calls as possible because I'm still very much growth. But titles change and titles don't really matter as long as I'm doing the work. At least that's where I am now. Like I would debate the whole growth and marketing thing, and I get the nuance of people saying that titles like can be anything, but I think it's just figuring out who you're hiring and their mindset. So yes, I'm now director of marketing in B2B, working very closely with sales, but still trying to do like a lot of experiments because we still need to get demo calls. We still need to like generate leads, and there's still a lot of things that we can do. We still need to get the customers who come in and who sign up on our Smile ID portal to become revenue generating customers. So there's still a lot of engagement that we need to do. So it's all just one thing. I feel like I'm in a place where a lot of the things I've done in my career are kind of like fitting nicely, where I have like really good understanding of different aspects of things. I've worked closely enough with product teams in B2C. Like I was saying yesterday in a webinar that when I was in B2C, my marketing growth role was sitting with product and marketing, and we just like work very closely with product. Now that I'm in B2B, my good heart is sitting with the commercial team and the sales team, but understanding how to like work that cross-functionally is still very helpful. So yeah, that's how I've gone from one place to the other. I think that was the question.
Yeah, I love how you spoke on the being exposed to growth, because I have a personal experience with that where I had worked in marketing. I felt like I was ready to do growth. And then it was a thing of if you actually had access to growth trainings, most of them still seemed like it was a lot of marketing. It was actually when I was now dumped in a growth role and I had worked with an actual like very technical team, and I'm like, yeah, this is way more than that. Okay, way more than like that. Like I was lost for like a while. And it was when I took a step back and out of it, that's when I actually envisioned that this was, is more like, I don't think you can start out like jumping into growth. Like it's a accumulated experience thing. There is business development. It's not a marketing function. Marketing is like a piece of it. And like, but it takes a while to like understand that, because there's a way to think around it. Like, yeah, I guess that's why we're having this conversation. And that's what people need to actually know. Let's talk about just an overview of digital marketing landscape or marketing landscape then versus now. How do you think things have changed when you started out, say, 5-10 years ago versus now? Michael, let's have you answer that.
Oh, okay.
What do you think were the dominant trends in the early days and now?
Okay. I think I'm one of those who, I don't think a lot has changed outside of AI. I mean, we've mentioned AI, we've looked at virtual reality and the likes, which is not so much in use. I mean, yeah, of course, virtual reality, I mean, maybe AI is what we currently use now in terms of tools and resources. I don't know, but I really don't think much has changed. That's my concept, because if I look back at what I was doing, I mean, what I did while I was in Jobberman, it's very similar to what I do now. Maybe not what I did during my time at the BBC, or where I worked with the agency or Guardian. It's looking more like maybe some of it in Guardian, but then in terms of the several aspects of marketing, several channels, looking at all those areas, I think it's partnerships, what have you. Nothing much has changed. The only thing, so maybe AI, and then what Peace mentioned earlier, which is initially people saw digital marketing as, and if you look at some JDs now, initially it used to be, even if you did growth or you did digital marketing, you were seen as just that media person managing budgets. But now what has changed is you're now thinking of revenue. You're thinking of, which is growth in itself, right? And I know, of course, Peace has the argument where you look at growth versus marketing. I also don't think they are the same. I don't like to call myself a digital marketer anymore because of the way it is. However, I feel digital marketers should also start thinking in that line of growth. It might not come in where they are thinking of working with sales, for instance. I'm one of those who think digital marketing is digital sales. Like you're a salesperson, it's the same. You're just behind a computer. The other guy goes out to sell. At the end of the day, you're trying to sell a product to get revenue, right? It's very much similar outside of maybe the new AI and the likes, but in terms of several channels we used, how we went about thinking about what we want to achieve. Yeah, that part. And maybe one important part too, which I mentioned earlier, is now thinking, because of the startup, the old startup thing, VCs coming in, what VCs would look at is your customer lifetime value. That's how they know how healthy the business is, right? They would look at it to see when would you be profitable. So that aspect is also coming in, because then we are now thinking, if I'm acquiring users, I'm trying to say if I'm buying users, if I'm acquiring users, what do we get back for those users, right? In terms of returns back to the company. So I think everyone, whether you're a growth person, you're a digital marketer, you need to always think about how are your actions impacting revenue coming in. So I think that's because businesses are now thinking of revenue and VCs are now.
Yeah, how marketing impacts this. Yeah.
So everyone is thinking of bootstrapping, for instance. How do you ensure what you spend so you don't just go get $10,000, $40,000 to just burn in a month, right?
Piers, what do you think are currently similar to what I asked Michael, what do you think are some current killers of digital marketing that weren't as pronounced before but now have taken I think influencer marketing now is kind of a huge thing as compared to 5-10 years ago. And how do you think that came about, and what do you think of these new models of marketing, and will they stay the test of time, say the next 5-10 years?
I think Michael answered the question brilliantly. I do think that everything will change because things are changing and marketing is very dynamic. So I'm not shocked that, well, for instance, influencer marketing is a big thing. I'm not shocked that community-led marketing is a thing now. A lot of people are
such a going
to build their communities and, using creators, personal. Everybody's doing community stuff. AI is shocking, but I'm also not shocked about how marketers are now able to leverage AI. Growth in itself as well. Like I said, when I was first time I was learning about growth, I didn't know anybody in Nigeria, for instance, who was doing the same thing or who wanted to learn that. But now everybody understands growth and everybody's talking about it and everybody's debating it, which is fantastic. Performance marketing, even as a role and as a term, I think it only started coming up. People just used to talk about everything as digital marketing. Yeah. Now people say, I'm an SEO specialist, I'm a performance marketing specialist, I'm a content strategist, I'm a content marketer, I'm a content... Marketing. I mean, there's a bunch of different roles coming up. And I think the way I think about it is, one, it shows that our industry in itself is evolving and there's a lot more people who are working in marketing. There's a lot more people who are understanding marketing. There's a lot more people who are assertive about the areas of marketing that they want to do. And so there's more distribution across the world. There's a bit more understanding and even more work for us to do than there was work for us then. Even though we still have a long way to go, there are a lot more companies value marketers now and hire marketers as one of their first early employees. Versus before, where it was engineering, product sales or nothing, and marketing will be the icing on the cake. We have a lot more, a bit more prestige than we did before, so which is growth, which is evolution. So I think it just makes sense. The new trends that we're seeing with the growth and the influencer and the community-led stuff, will they stand the test of time? I think they would evolve. I think how they stand the test of time is going to be different. I don't think the influencer marketing that we see today is how it was 5 years ago. Influencer marketing 3-5 years ago was mostly just the big, very big celebrities, brand endorsement, ads on TV. The influencer marketing that we see today is one guy that has 10,000 followers on Twitter that somebody's just paying to drop this tweet here and drop that tweet there. It's that TikTok influencer that somebody wants to dance. It's the guys who are doing music videos with. Influencer marketing in itself is already evolving, even though the influencer thing is still happening. So I think that's what is still going to happen. There will always be influencer marketing because when you think about it, it's a key way. If you want, even referral, I tell somebody to use a product I'm using, that's an influencer thing. It's just that I know this person. So it's always going to be a thing that happens, but the approach is going to evolve a lot. Growth in itself is going to evolve a lot. SEO is going to evolve. Somebody on my team the other day was saying that we're debating AI, right? And the engineer on my team was just saying how there was this announcement he saw recently where this company is building an AI tool that lets people that codes for people. So you basically say, hey, this is what I want to build, and you write it. Yeah, and he was like, it's freaking him out because he's like, will I have a job? That he thought, you know, engineers are the ones who are safe in this world of AI. And we're like, Kelvin, if you're thinking about this, imagine the rest of us are marketers in the team. Like, imagine how we're feeling, where everybody now thinks that if they give a topic to ChatGPT, they can write an article. And we're all starting articles now with in this rapidly evolving landscape. like imagine what marketers are going through. I was like, it's AI. And we're interesting. But then I think where I'm going to is like, so the SEO person on my team, Manuel was like, What he's excited about is that people are also getting forced to learn how to humanize content and not just like leverage AI. And that when, like a year ago, he's on this SEO group and everybody was just writing with AI and writing with the algorithm, and they're getting like huge amount of traffic. And then recently Google made an announcement and changed the algorithm. So when a content has like AI infused in it, or like shows that is heavily written by AI, it basically deprioritizes on like the search algorithm. And he's like, people are losing traffic from like 20K traffic to like zero traffic because they've all been writing for AI. Was learning how to use the information and humanize the bit more. I kind of do stuff faster, but not just like copy and paste stuff. And I'm like, that's a really good point, because that's where AI is going to a point where we're not just copy and pasting, we're just learning to have like a different thinking brain and an enabler, right? And so that's what's always going to happen, to find ways where we can learn not to copy and paste and do evolving language, but to get better in the existing channels and figuring out how they can evolve to be much more creative and much more impactful. Because in as much as marketers are becoming to get it a lot more respect, it also means that people are also looking to us to keep proving why we are needed. It's like a two-way game. We're from a place of nobody's hiring marketers, so they're hiring marketers now, but they want to know that you guys are actually like bringing in performance. And so we're going to have to keep learning to evolve the tactics we're using to ensure that it's affecting bottom line pretty much. So yeah, and new forms of marketing might come up. I don't hear a lot about guerrilla marketing like we used to in the traditional sense there, because a lot of things are digital. But I think at some point we might maybe even go back to that and do more immersive events and do more VR stuff that are in person but has a bit of technology. So yeah, things would always evolve, I think, is my point.
Yeah. That, I mean, you already answered my next question, which was, I was going to ask you, what were you most excited about emerging technologies? But you already covered that. Micah, I'm going to ask you, in the world of data becoming even more and more with everything, how do you think this would impact the way we measure marketing success? Or how do you think measurement would change with data being a lot these days in terms of marketing?
I've always been data-driven, right? If you ask my team members, they know you can't just come ask Michael for budget. He's going to ask you several questions. Okay, even if you want $1,000, I'm telling you, okay, what are you bringing back to me? Would I make one? At least I don't get to lose the money. If you perform low, I mean, if you perform badly, it should be 1-1. And I think we discussed something earlier around entry level and senior people, right? Just understanding what type of metrics would work. I know you had mentioned, should entry level, should they just run ads? I think starting from entry level, you need to let them know what the company's goal is. They need to see, in terms of the metrics, they need to see what they do, how it leads up to the major KPI. So I'll give an example. I don't know. Your question is around metrics, right? Or KPIs.
Yes.
And how data informs that. So how I do it now is you have two major revenues. I mean, where I currently work, which is users and revenue. And then it's broken down into, you do brand awareness, it brings users, or you do whatever you do, it brings users, it brings revenue. The sales team does this, it brings revenue. For my own team, is just looking at everything you do. At the end of the day, my weekly tracker, my weekly numbers, I'm just looking at what you do. So if it's users, you've delivered 1 million users, how is that tying to our revenue? Has our revenue grown by 20% because user grew by 20%? If not, there is a mismatch somewhere. So it needs to be balanced, right? With the way data is coming in, I think you just have to be thinking numbers every time.
So how do you keep track of important metrics? Like what are now, like, is it going to change how we, what we're measuring or how we're measuring it?
Yeah, I think it has evolved. I know Peace touched on that part. My early days, what I measured was signups, users. That was all. Maybe job applications was part of it, right? But now I am thinking in within my space, my paid media guy, when he tries to spend, he has to look at the customer lifetime value. And I don't know, maybe for benefit of those who would watch the podcast, a customer lifetime value is just, it just shows the health. It shows the health of the customers, it shows retention. And then you can see if you spent $2 to acquire this customer, when would you break even? When would you make $2 back? And are you going to make $4? Ideally, from the VC's point of view, your customer, when you look at the CAC, CLTV, it's about your customer acquisition cost should be 1/3 or 1/4 of what your customer lifetime value is. So it should be 3 or 4 times what you are spending. Worst case scenario, maybe 2 times, so you're not losing. And that's what has changed. I mean, from my own experience, that's what has changed. In my conversations with my team, even if you are doing SEO, right? It's free, right? It looks free. It's not so free because there's cost attached to it. You are paying the SEO guy. So it's whatever his salary is, if your salary is 3K, 2K, or 1K, I'm equating it to the customers. I just have to put some numbers. There's always a cost to everything. And I think the other bits data has also helped to do is just trying to get more value from your users. So you are looking at, you bring in 1 million, it's always a funnel. You have about maybe 400K drop-offs, 600K drop-offs. You're just thinking, what else do they want that you can sell to them? Even though you don't make a lot, it's just saying, can you still get some more value from them? And the customer you've brought in, how much value is like trying to suck them dry, trying to get everything you can get from them. So it's, if you bring in a user, the user is buying something from your platform, what else can they? Can they read an article and maybe make money from advertising ads? Because it's then looking at the average revenue you get per user and just trying to see how do we increase it. It gives you more ideas around experimentation. And that's what data would do. Looking inside and trying to understand the user needs, understanding what they want, heat mapping, just understanding where they click on your website. There are a lot of data points. And as we continue to improve, as the days would go, you'd see that there are a lot of actions and a lot of benefits, a lot of value. The key thing is just driving value, and that's what data has really helped to do. So I think as it's evolved, yes. And data is key because you can learn more from the user and see what they like and maybe build new product features or what have you that can get you more revenue.
Yeah, thanks. Pierce, we've spoken about different level, entry level, mid level, senior folks. What makes an entry level, a mid level, and a senior level? At what point do you think someone is ready to move from mid level to a senior level? Because I feel like in my career, I kind of worked mid level for a long time, and I always felt like I was ready for a senior level. And when I was actually put in a senior level position, it was like, I mean, to be fair, I did feel like I didn't have the chance to. I wasn't eased into the role. Fair enough or stuff. So, what do you think in this common day of, in this day and age, not when you started, like what makes an entry level, what makes a mid level, and what makes a senior level as someone that has hired for this position?
Honestly, I think that question has a lot of nuance. I think a large part of it can be answered from person to person. Because for instance, I feel like I've been in senior level all through my career. So I think I have been, if you look at my job description, head of marketing, head of growth, marketing stuff, that's kind of how it was. I've also worked in startups. So there are a lot of people who would have worked in corporates and their job title will obviously be different. But I had the opportunity, unfortunately, to work in startups, which meant that I had to do many things and like grow teams from scratch, literally. And, you know, yeah, there was no chance to be, I don't know it. It was, yeah, head of marketing, come and figure it out. Some other people would start from like a junior role and then go through the ranks. So first of all, just my disclaimer is I think there's a lot of nuance. Like it would differ person to person, company to company. I have people who, for instance, my friends that work at Google, they would consider themselves still maybe like junior or mid-level, not yet senior level, because when you look at Google's career trajectory, so senior level is I'm a director, I'm a VP. That's like I spent 10 years at Google. So it's very different. However, for me, I always think about it in terms of years of experience / competence and where you've worked. right? The way I would hire someone is always a reflection of what have you done? Where have you worked before? If you don't have any experience, if you have less than 2 years of experience, I would generally consider you entry level, except the experience that you have and you can show that incompetent is where you've done very hard stuff. Because to be very honest, there are people who they just got into their career, but they are working like a beast. And so they've accumulated a lot of experience. It might not be the depth that comes with 10 years, but it's width that means that, and they have the capacity that means if you put them in a mid-level with just that 2 years of experience, they would swim instead of sinking. And it's personality. It's a bit hard for me to answer this question because there are people who have seen and I'm like, yeah, you have 4 years of experience, but I'm not going to call you like a senior mid-level because your competence is not reflecting it. You probably just maybe worked at one thing, you were kind of just vibing through, so you're counting the years, but you're not really growing. And then, for instance, person who just left my team, she came in as my EA, entry level, basically. She had done like a few freelance things here and there, but when she came in, we had to like do the work from scratch, right? Spent a little under 2 years with me, so about 22 months, 20 months. If she comes to me now, I'm not going to hire her as the junior level. I'm going to hire her as a mid-level because the amount of capacity that she has built, I can see that this person has grown. On the other hand, there are some people that it's taking 4 years for me to see that, oh, they've moved from here to here. So when I hire, yes, there's that. I'm looking for years of experience because that is the initial, for instance, your resume, that's the initial bit for me to have an idea of like what you've done. I'm looking at what kind of companies you worked for, what job titles you've had, because that's also like a very good filter for me to get an understanding of, oh, maybe this person has led a team or two, or maybe this person has been a really senior employee, or maybe this person has, you know, worked in like a wider team. Like, but when it gets to really putting you in a role to work with me in where I'm hiring, it becomes really about the competence and the work that you've done. If you talk to me and we do like, and I'm not saying like technical interview, like not the bullshit and vibes, like when you do technical interview for people and you're asking questions and you know that this person is talking to you based on stuff, like you can always tell. I'll give you a good example of someone that we hired recently on my team. And I remember when I did like the initial interview, immediately like we talked, I'm like, I'm most likely going to hire this person. Like what he was saying was making sense. And you know that you can, if you've done the work, you can tell when somebody else has done the work. So like one of my biggest blessings is that I'm a generalist, right? And so I lead teams really well because it's very hard for anybody that does anything in marketing to bullshit me. Like I'm not an SEO expert. There's some things that I'm very, like if I'm going to be a specialist, I'll go to performance marketing. I will do strategy. I will do content. But I won't take an SEO role because I'm not an expert. But I know enough SEO that if I talk to somebody that knows the work, I will know they are doing it, right? If I'm talking to somebody who is doing any form of marketing, right? SEM, whatever it is, I know enough about it that you can bullshit me. And so we're talking to this person, I'm like, this person has done the work. You're not quoting stuff that you read up anywhere. Like I can tell the way you're talking about tools. Like when somebody is explaining, oh, I've used this tool, saying, oh, I went here. If you've used that tool before, you can see that their mind is working to remember where different buttons are in their dashboard. You get what I mean? And so we're talking, and I'm like, this person knows what he's talking about. So I move into my team and say, hey, go do the cross-functional interview. And then someone on my team, Kelvin, was like, I'm not too sure. I feel like he's probably just bullshitting and kind of like just spitting theories. So I said, that's interesting because I didn't get that vibe. So let's do the technical interview together. I was going to do only a technical interview myself. But I said, you know what, Kelvin, come with me because you're going to work very closely with this person. So let's do the technical interview together and just listen. And I started asking my very technical questions. And he's answering every question. He's answering everything. Like he's giving detail. He's giving detail. And then Kelvin is texting me. I said, I apologize. I think I was wrong. Like he actually knows what he's talking about. I'm going to use this too. That's pretty much it. Like when you hire somebody for a certain level, you can tell that, okay, this person is here. You can also tell that this person might not be senior yet, but if I put them in this role, give them 3-6 months, they will grow and fit into it, so I can bet on them and say come in as a senior person. We can also tell that you're not going to be a senior person in 2 years. Do you get what I mean? So I think it's very nuanced, but for two sides of the coin, if you're hiring, first of all, make sure that either you or someone on the hiring committee really knows what they're looking for. Then you can be able to detect the kind of hire that you want and what level the kind of person who's coming in should actually be in. Otherwise, you're just going to like make the wrong choice. So like there has to be like a technical person that understands. If you're a product manager, get a product manager to interview who's really good. If you're hiring like a content person, make sure that there's somebody who really understands the role of content. If you're hiring somebody who's supposed to come on to performance, let somebody who has run ads before sit down in that interview. So if somebody's saying that something is cost per click, but they're calling CPM, you know that no, it's actually wrong. So that's really good. But if you're on the other hand, where you are like, oh, I'm the talent, I don't know where, you would kind of always have an idea. It's a matter of being honest. I think you won't always have the self-awareness to introspect and say, what do I actually want in my career right now? What do I need? Am I in a position where I still want to have a manager and a team and a peer where I'm still really learning, but I don't think I have that leadership capacity right now or that experience to be a senior, because it might also put too much pressure on me and I feel like I will crumble. Like, you should always know, there was a point in my career after I've led teams where I'm like, I'm tired of reporting to CEOs. And that was when I was joining Smile, actually. I was like, I'm tired of reporting to CEOs. I've done this for like the last couple of jobs. And it's very, Michael, you know, it's very high pressure, because you cannot know what you're, like, you can't fail. So I don't go to Mark right now with a, come and help me brainstorm. I go with, this is my solution. This is what we're thinking about. Give me feedback. Not, like, it always has to be from a level of preparedness. And I was like, I'm kind of tired. I want to, like, work with a manager who reports to the CEO so that you be the person. Let me be able to just, let me learn for a bit. Let me just be managed for a bit. And it worked. And I had, like, and I had someone. But then he left. So now I'm back to reporting to the CEO. But at least I enjoyed that first 7 months of just having a bit of, it's nice to kind of like learn from somewhere. It's nice to be able to go back to someone and best. I'm nice to say, hey, Navid, what's up? What do you think? I don't think I'm able to figure this thing out. But now I'm back to that. But that was just for me at saying, I kind of need a bit of a different experience now in my career. It's still a senior role, yes. But like, what do I need right now? And what's optimal to me? And being in a place where I'm like, okay, yes, I enjoy it. You want to leave? Do I need somebody else to manage me? No, I'm good. I think I've gotten a bit of what I need. I've gotten like to really get the understanding. And that's what I think everybody should be able to know, to say, you know, maybe I'm not ready. Maybe instead of me swimming, maybe I would sink. Maybe right now I want to challenge myself and actually go for a senior role, because I've been stuck in the same place and I want to like push myself to like, yeah. So nuance.
Very much resonates. I don't even know where to start from. Michael, I'm going to follow up with what he said, and I'm going to ask, in your experience, how do you think employers, business owners, founders, and all of that can set up their marketing teams for success, like based on your experience, even senior leads, senior hires, mid-level, entry-level, how do you think you can set people up for success? I'm asking this because I've had experience working at different places, working at the specific role where I felt like I was just dumped into it and I didn't have the chance to grow in it, which wasn't a great thing for me. And like, it was just too much thinking initially. How do you think people can set their great hires up for success, regardless of the level that they're at?
Yeah, I think a piece she touched on that a bit, where she mentioned, and I had that situation recently. You want to hire, say, one SEO lead, and then you need to be good at SEO. If you don't know it, just bring in someone who knows it. If you have to bring a freelancer from somewhere to sit on that call to ask the questions, because you either get it right or wrong there. I mean, you get it wrong. Sorry, can you hear me? You get it wrong. Then you've hired someone for 3 months, probation, confirmation, blah, 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 blah. You've paid, you pay recruitment fees, you've lost money, and then you've just wasted your time, right? I think one of the ways I would go about it is be very clear about the job responsibilities and the job objectives. What do you expect for this role? Let it be clear. I mean, from day one, from recruitment. You want it to be clear, and then you channel your questions around that, because that's what you demand. Don't just pick some job objectives online. Be very clear about what you want and how you want this person to help you get to where you want to get to. That's usually the first place, the first area you'd make a mistake, because then you want to get a recruitment agency. I've worked with Jobberman before. I mean, I used to work with Jobberman rather. You get a recruitment agency. I tell you for the truth, HRs, they are good at managing people, but they might not understand. They have no idea what you want in terms of the role, for that role in particular, for a product manager, especially when it comes to specifics. So I would say, let's just be clear on your job responsibilities from start, be clear on the job objectives. And when the person comes in his first month, you need to be clear on expectations, what you expect. Yes, there's also the thing around culture fit, which is more HR conversations, because you want someone, ideally, you also want to test. I know PCD, the technical interview. Second thing is you also want to see what kind of person works with you in terms of their attitude, their mindset, how they think about work, team playing, can they work alone, can they learn by themselves, and all of that, yeah.
Yeah, but you have that kind of person. How do you set them up for success? And like, how do you make sure they don't either burn out, or how do you ensure they actually keep their best work and they enjoy working there?
So that question is tough, because recently I also experienced burnout myself, not because of the company, but I think it's partly because of me, right? Again, with growth people, you can get so hands-on, even if you're a manager and you're a leader, because you know some of these things. You're like, you just log into Google AdWords one time, and you just give your guy the time to get the job done, right? You get into it, you just place that, the pressure you give your teams. And I know Pace talked about it, even the CEOs, because they are also the chairman, the VCs, the investors, chairman of the board is chasing them around. So then some of them will just come pour it on you. You are the growth person, you need to get this. And I think what we need to do there is try to reduce the amount of pressure and reduce, what do you call it now, micromanagement. It's not healthy, yeah, because it just places pressure. It makes the person, in some cases, some people need to be, depending on them, some people are very laid back, you just need to micromanage them, but you need to decide when do you stop, right? So it's micromanagement, reduce it as much as possible. Get people to be creative. Peace mentioned something earlier. Get them to run experiments. Empower them. Like, give them that opportunity. Create some budgets aside, small budgets that they can use to run experiments, quick experiments, and then they can test different things. Right? Give them room to test. And I really liked Peace's model. I think I want to pick that. Just give them 6 experiments. You guys need to set a target, run 6 experiments per quarter, or 6, 10. Then you want them to fail. You want people to fail, ideally. You have to give room for them to fail. But when you want everything, and I used to be guilty of that, where you come to me for budget, I'm asking, what do we get back? It should change to rather than give you 5K, I'm going to give you 200. What can you get for 200 before we scale? If it fails, I'm willing to lose that budget, right? But just try, because it gets them to, they start reading. It just gets them to be very creative. They start picking ideas from different places, and then they want to try it out. Yeah, but creativity sometimes helps to reduce burnout. And when there's mental block, that space, it becomes very, very difficult. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Michael, you spoke about allowing people to fail. I think it was at a higher level in my career that I actually got more comfortable failing. So I like to ask, I know people like to ask, what has been your most successful life? I'm going to ask you, what has been something that failed, and what did you learn from that and move on from that? Because I think with marketers, people need to be comfortable failing. So what has been a major fail for you? And then how did you move on from that and like add it to like your learnings and all of that?
Is that for me?
Yes, yes.
I think it was for Michael.
This is for you.
First of all, right, yes, it's great to fail, but you need to also know the kind of organization you're working for before you can start failing and doing experiments. It's not every organization that is very open to experimentation. I'm lucky to have worked in them. I also been in a place where I'm able to push to say, if I'm going to do growth, we have to be able to do experiments, because just shadow who you're working for. But the greatest failure that I think I've had wasn't a campaign at it per se, like a specific campaign. It was the point where I know about the good funnel and I've done it for a long time. But I got to a situation where we're very focused on acquisition because we're trying to raise money at the time in the company. And so the CEO was like, let's acquire users. So I said, cool, I'm a marketer. It's acquire users, we'll do it. And we were growing very fast, month on month, growing really well. 3 months in, 4 months in. But then one day I was like, we're growing. But from every time that we, so if we're doing like 50K users every month, 50K users, for me to get to like the next point where we are reaching like a monthly active users of like 200K, I realized I have to increase the budget. And I'm like, something's not working. Because we can't scale with this performance marketing where the only way to grow is increasing our budget so we can acquire more users. And it doesn't, and it feels like our monthly active users is kind of the same thing, even though I just acquired 150K users last month or last 3 months. And so I had to do like a deeper dive into the funnel and realize our retention was trash. We're acquiring users, but they were not staying. They were activating, no, they would sign up, they would activate. They would need to do their first kind of just dip. And so we're just basically just filling in a bucket. Right, with a lot of water, but it wasn't actually staying. And I really hot because we were growing really well. And I was like, acquisition is not a problem. The messaging is working, the campaign is working, the product is not working. So we need to fix that. And we kind of ended up just passing marketing for a while. And I describe it as one of my own personal failures, not just like the company. Like there are a lot of decisions that the entire company and leadership could have made in just like building a great product and stuff. But I think about it and said, instead of me to focus on that KPI of acquire users, and I feel like I was just going there, and it took me like 3 months to come back to say something is wrong. I know this thing. I should have paid attention to retention from day one. I should have pushed back to say, yes, this thing that you want to do will not work because we need to fix this leaking bucket. I should have done that much earlier. But it's a great learning point because I never forget retention ever again. I never forget like what is the quality of users. I know that when I'm reporting, even now in a B2B company, when I'm reporting MQLs, I have to also know the numbers of how many of them are converting to like a sales qualified lead, how many of them are converting to like actually close deals, because that's also the only way that I keep my job, to say that yes, all the awareness and traffic and SEO metrics is great, but look, this set of customers came actually through marketing effort and they are producing this result. The thing that made me proudest in my team last year was looking back and I could see exactly how much worth of deals in USD that marketing had contributed to pipeline. Like this amount of like annual recurring revenue is us, right? And that's super important because yes, we did like a bunch of amazing things. So I think that's definitely like the one failure that I always remember. It's back in my mind to say, yes, just not paying attention to the rest of the funnel made us lose a lot of money in the early days that we shouldn't have if we had just slowed growth and focused on fixing that retention problem first. Then we could have gone back to like do growth by acquisition.
Thank you. Mike, I'm going to ask you the last question and Peace is just going to round up. We've spoken about experimentation. We've spoken about how companies set up teams or hire teams. I'm going to now ask you, in terms of individuals, how are you able to choose impactful projects, either as an early entry level, mid-level, senior level? For entry level, how do you choose which project to work on that will actually be impactful for your career instead of just working where you may not be growing at senior levels? When do you know that, oh, this is worth leaving your current job for, in your experience?
If I was starting again, I would definitely do growth with thinking about revenue, thinking about what the company is making. I know there is a rush around, and Peace mentioned it, I mean, CEOs, when it's time to raise money, there's that thing about, okay, you know what, let's just bring the users in, because we need to have 5 million, 20 million, 100 million users, and then we can raise money. So I think if I was to go back, if I was to start again, this time around, I would look at growth. And just like Peace mentioned, you need to look at every part of the funnel from point A to point Z. And you need to be sure everything is working and see how you can drive value from your users. In terms of looking at switching, if I were to... So I mean, I am not, I think for me, I'm very also entrepreneurial, right? So I'm also thinking, if I know all of these things by now, and I think almost all growth person, I mean, if you're doing growth, that's the advantage you have, because I mean, like Peace is a generalist, you understand all aspects of marketing. Is now thinking, what can you build yourself? Maybe working with tech teams, then see if you can generate revenue. So you just see things you can plug in at different point. But if I was to say, look for, maybe I'm not the right person to answer the question, because then I'm not thinking, as at now, I'm not thinking of switching. For me now, it's like, okay, I've done what I need to learn. Now I need to set up my own stuff and build and get someone to do it. Then I market in terms of the level where I am at now. I don't fancy the role of a CEO. It's not my thing. I don't fancy the role of a COO. I would rather be a...
What role do you want to end up with?
I mean, I just want to continue doing my growth. I don't want to get... I did my
MBA. So you want to, like, chief marketing officer, chief growth officer?
Yeah. I would be a chief growth officer or a growth manager for my own startup. Get someone else to do the CEO. I don't want to look at finance. I don't want to look at HR. I don't want to look. It's not my business. So I would just rather focus on what I think I can do
well. I love it.
And get someone else to run it, because it's not my space, right? Yeah, I did my MBA recently, and then I decided in my MBA that I'm never going to be a CEO. Like, I can't be thinking.
Maybe I'll end up at the end of that as well.
Yeah.
Do you have any MBA tips?
It's a tough one. MBA tips. So I did executive MBA. I did my executive MBA, and that was last year. My own area and what I got from it was more around just some basic stuff around understanding the unique value proposition of a business. I mean, my own was targeted to people who want to build business. I mean, who want to run startups. So that was the school it's tailored towards that rather than the regular kind of MBAs. So it was a bit different. Do I have tips? Maybe not. Maybe not now. But I can share about it.
Fair enough. Peace, how about you? What would you be if you were starting afresh? For people that are starting afresh, how would you choose project to start with, early careers? How would you choose project to switch from as a senior level? Yeah, person. What is worth impact? Like, what do you think of? Because when you look back at some projects, you kind of realize that, this wasn't really the right move I had to make or where to start from or something. Yeah, what would you do differently?
So my advice for people who are starting their career is the same. It's always the same. This is what I'll still tell you now. Explore. I think you would learn a lot about yourself really quickly when you explore and not box yourself into something. So get into a generalist role real quick at the beginning, first 1 year. If you get into a generalist role and then today you're doing email marketing, tomorrow they say you're gonna write a blog post, then the next day someone's like, can you open Facebook and run ads? You learn quickly in 6 months. I hate when I have to do emails, but I really love when I'm doing research and writing articles. Then you can figure out, maybe I should specialize in content. Maybe I should specialize in performance. Maybe I like doing all of it. So maybe I should go into like the digital marketing growth aspect of things. But also, that 1 year would not be a waste, because one, it would have given you an idea of what you're really good at and what you don't like. But also, it means that you always have a really good understanding, or even just the lingo across board, that will make it easy to work with other people in other teams. And as you grow in your career, that holistic fundamental knowledge will just come in handy, right? Because I kind of understand this and I know how to work with, I know how marketing, how content connects into PPC. I know how it connects into SEO. I know how it connects into like influencer, right? Because you kind of did that. And the same thing, if you can do a rotational internship, if you're lucky, and do product, and then do coding and do accounting, it can be the same thing. You realize, yeah, marketing is not for me. Maybe I want to be a product manager. But it's generally like, just always find ways to explore. So I would tell my younger self that. It's also the thing that I'm most grateful for my younger self, that I gave myself the opportunity to not box myself early on. Boxing is great as you go, but I think it was good. Some other people might feel differently, but it was very pivotal for me. So that's usually my stuff. And then as you start building your career, to take projects, I think you want to take projects where two things, right? One, you get the opportunity to learn a lot, especially when you're still young. By the time you start doing like 4 years of experience, optimize for money is great. Because at least then you have you should have the traction and the proof of work to be able to say, I'm ready to optimize for money. But when you're still like first 2-3 years and you're building that foundation or you're trying to build that portfolio, if I go back, I would optimize for the place where I would learn the most, that would have challenged me the most, regardless of the title, where can I really learn the most? But two, where can I have the most impact? I would not work for, this is very personal, but I would not work for very early stage companies and at the start of my career, because when you work for a startup, it's hit or miss. You might be lucky. For instance, there are people who worked at Flutterwave when it was a startup. They got lucky, face that. But there's some other people who have worked for other companies that we don't know. And it's like, I spent 1-2 years, the company has died, and I have to go for something. And I can say I did this, but it's not as great as having a known company in your resume anymore. So the parts are kind of different. And so I would not go for very early companies. I would optimize for companies who already show that this product market fit. They already are doing something. Like, I know I'm not launching with them if I'm still very early, because you might not always be lucky. So if you have the risk appetite, go for it. Because if you do it, you can have an upside and become a millionaire in process. But if you don't have a good risk appetite and you wanted to just figure out, how do I build a stable career, steady career? I would go for the companies who have a bit of success and traction and product market fit to show they know what they're doing, they know what they're building. I can go in there, I can learn. But if I also do good work, I could take them from point A to point C, and that becomes the result that I take to the next company to be able to get the next role.
If you can hear it, I'm clapping because that was just massive. Absolutely love everything that you guys shared. We've gone way past time. I'm grateful that you guys could stay and share past time. Thank you so much for doing this.
I've
come to the end of it. This is going to be the first episode when it goes out. That's why it's an overview, and who else would be perfect to kind of shed that light on it? I thought you guys have been incredible. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
Have a good Easter.
Thank you so much. You too, Micah. It was very nice to hear you talk. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, nice.
Thank you so much for hosting this.
Yeah.
It was easier and more calmer than I thought. It was just juicy. It was
even I thought. Okay.
It was.
It was.
I've never done this podcasting before. I know happiness knows I'm a very shy person. Yeah, I just run away from. from the cameras, I would say.
Thank you so much.